Today has been a throwback Sunday. Our history project, a group of people within the church, has been working hard going through the archives of our church, over 120 years of our existence, and they have uncovered sermons and worship series and orders of service from decades and decades ago. And so we thought it would be fun from time to time to look back into the archives and pull some content forward. I calculated that there's been approximately 6,200 Sundays in the history of Foothills. And so there's bound to be at least one Sunday that's worth repeating. One can hope, right? And so that's what we've been doing today. So we selected a sermon by the Reverend Walter Worrell Jones, who served this congregation
It ended in 1990, and he started 19 years before that.
So for 19 years, that ended in 1990. Some of you could do the math. Roy was known as a beautiful orator and a real champion for justice. He was actually in Selma when Martin Luther King had to call out to clergy to come during the civil rights movement. And so today we've taken one of his sermons, Faith for the Long Haul, Faith for Now, and we've been kind of playing with it. So in the first service, I kind of preached it verbatim, which if you know Roy or know of his writing, is not an easy feat. He is a beautiful linguist, and so the complexities of the sentences got caught in my mouth a few times. You can listen to the podcast of me kind of recreating that. In the last service, what I did is kind of reimagined it. I took the content of the sermon and I kind of put it into my own words and my own feel. And for this service, what we thought we'd do is I'm going to kind of abridge that sermon, and then we're going to invite some discussion between Gretchen and I and all of us on the questions that Roy kind of raises and some of the answers. So I'm going to begin with the meditation that Roy offered at the beginning of his sermon. May our hearts and minds be open to leap over the boundaries of tongue and hear the universal word of love that speaks in them. For this is the source of hope, now and ever. Amen. So you walk up to an elevator. It's a pretty common, circumstance these days, and you press the button, and you wait. And you wait. And you wait. Anyone ever been there before? What's the first thing that kind of goes through your mind? Did I really push the button, right? Or even if you're sure that you pressed the button, you're like, I must not have pressed it hard enough. Or I have some anger building in my body, so I may get it out in pressing the button. And so usually what happens when we're approaching an elevator and we are waiting and it doesn't come, we press it again, we start to wonder, what did I do wrong? You press it again and it still doesn't come, the questions might start to increase, right? Has it broken down? Is it stuck on the 11th floor? Or maybe I've made a mistake, that the building is closed, that the electricity is off, that I am in the wrong day and time, that there's a power failure, and that maybe this isn't even an elevator at all, but a trick door. Maybe you don't go that far. This simple instance of pressing the button and waiting for the elevator and it not coming is actually a deep practice of faith, right? I mean, how many of you know how elevators work? It's like, yeah, a few of you, but like on a really technical level. Like you could build me an elevator. How many of you have ever like talked to someone who makes sure the elevators are safe? Okay, like three people. How many of you think generally elevators are safe? Actually, elevators teach us a lot about faith, right? Because all of you, the people who haven't talked to the people who know about elevators, or even talked to the people who made them safe, all somehow trust that when you press the button, that A, it's going to come, and B, when you get in it, it will be safe. I mean, the things I know about it is that, like, if the string thing gets cut, you're going to be fine, right? String thing, whatever it is. But, like, I don't know that for sure. Like, I've seen videos that tell me that's true, but what if it's just a big conspiracy? I mean, I have to trust, right? There's a degree of trust that I have in other people, a degree of faith that I have to put in the technical expertise, the chemical components of steel, whatever they use, that actually calling an elevator is a lot about faith. Faith in the design, faith in the reliability of the power, faith in our even our own familiarity with the signs of what it means to call an elevator. And here's the question. So let's say you had that experience. You went to that building. You pressed the button. It never came. You had your crisis. You pressed it again. You had your second crisis. You press it again. It still doesn't come. When you go to the next building on another day, maybe a week later, and you need to go in an elevator, and you press the button, are you worried it's not going to come? Some of you, yes. Majority of you, probably not, right? That one single moment of maybe existential shock to your assumptions about life wasn't enough to shatter your faith in elevators. It's still intact. That when you press the button, more times than not, you trust that the car will arrive. Roy uses this story in his sermon to speak to one of the most, I think, important aspects of faith, which is that faith is actually a collective enterprise. That the faith we have in ourselves, the faith we have in other people, the faith we have in the reality of things comes and is dependent upon our relationships with other people, trusting relationships with other people. I don't know how elevators work. I don't inspect them every time I go and push the button, but I trust other people to do so. I would even trust the building in which that elevator that never came, the people running that would fix it, generally. I would trust that that would happen. I imagine that most of us can point to moments in our culture or in our lives in where the trust and the faith that we have seems to be like abundant, that there's a trusting atmosphere, that there's kind of a goodwill that is passed from people to person to person. And I imagine we also can point to times in our lives, or maybe moments in our families, in which that trust of other people seems to be diminished. And when our trust in other people is diminished, what happens is we kind of shrink back and disengage. If I can no longer trust that you actually did the dishes when you told me you were going to do it, it's just me. I'm going to step back. If I can't trust that the elevator is going to come on time, maybe I'm not going to use elevators. If I can't trust that what politicians say they're going to do, they actually do, I'm probably not going to trust any of them when they make any promises anymore. And there are times in which a single moment, a single shock can break our trust in reality. For many people, the terrorist attacks on 9/11, the experience of Vietnam, the death of Michael Brown or Trayvon Martin. So many single moments can sometimes flip the world upside down. But for many of us, the challenges to our faith aren't so much in a single moment, but when we have approached an elevator, metaphorically speaking, and we've pressed the button, and every single time, it's never come. Roy offers this definition of faith that I feel like is beautiful and expansive, especially for Unitarian Universalists who bristle at the word faith. He says, faith is the posture of trust, which opens access to whatever reinforcements for meaning or sources of initiative or direction there are. That faith is the posture of trust that opens access to whatever real reinforcements for meaning or sources of initiative or direction there are. That faith is the trust that opens these things to us. And so the question we ask ourselves then is, what is worthy of our trust? If we're going to depend upon it, and if its absence is going to cause us to stumble into crises, existential or more pragmatic, what is worthy of our trust? What is worthy for us to put our faith in? And does it matter where we develop this trust or this faith? I'm remembering the experience after the 2016 election, that for many white liberals, they experienced the election of Donald Trump as a fundamental betrayal of a trust they had in this country, a betrayal of the values that they thought underpinned society itself. The idea was that it couldn't actually happen, and yet it did. It kind of pulled the rug from under the set of faith that many white liberals had about the nature of humanity, about the movement of progress, about the fundamental rights that we should guarantee other people. The interesting thing is that if you talk with many people of color in this country about their experience of the 2016 election, they were not surprised. They were not surprised that this could happen. In fact, this was what usually happens in their communities. What usually happens is being continued, being pushed further to the margins. What usually happens is a need to fight for survival of your children. That in fact, their faith wasn't in the progress of liberal values in our election, but their faith was in their own capacity to survive and be resilient again and again because they've had to. And that's the funny thing about faith, is that faith is a collective exercise. The faith is something we have to do together. And so if our faith is built in a very insular way, when we're only around people that think like us, look like us, act like us, come from the same schools, speak the same languages as us, if our faith is built, forged in the fires of familiarity, it's going to be a weak faith when it confronts the realities of our lives, the realities of other people, the realities that difference is the nature of our world. So what can we put our faith in? Now, Roy had the beautiful answer, but I feel like in the sermon it was a little bit incomplete. So I want to share a little bit about what he says we can put our faith in. Because he says we can't put our faith in a future that's just inherently going to be better. He talks a lot about how religions have said for generations that it's okay, you're suffering now, but in some other place, maybe heaven, maybe somewhere else, it'll be okay, right? And people have bought into that because we've needed to. But we need something, we need a trust that actually helps us in the present. But on the other hand, we need a faith that just doesn't say, don't worry about the future. Live for the now, because we know that what we do now builds the futures of our children and our grandchildren and the future of this world and every single living being in it. And so we have to find an answer, a faith that can support our ability to live for now and for the long haul. So what does Roy say? Roy says that we can find our faith in the cosmos. In the cosmos that conceived and nourished the human possibilities that brought you into being. It's a little bit heady. But I think what he's getting at is this idea that somehow we as a species, somehow you as an individual, emerged into this world. And the forces that were that creative are still at work. The forces of possibility are still at work. He goes further, not only the forces of the cosmos, but the family and the human community that nurtured you into the person you are is also still here. The people are around you as well. And so when you bring these two together, the possibilities of not only the creative potential of us existing at all and the reality that we are not alone give us the possibility to change each other. To change the world. But then he throws in this really beautiful science metaphor, which I love, because if you've ever heard me preach before, I'm usually preaching about ants. He talks about tropism, which is this term in biology which talks about the tendency of plants to grow towards the sun. And what he says is that he has a faith in the human pull towards the good, towards the compassionate, and towards community. And that he has faith in that still being here, despite all the evidence. And in the sermon, Roy talks about concentration camps, and he talks about death squads, but still he has a faith in that pull, even if it's something that happens to most, if not all, of us. What I think Roy is telling us is that our sources of faith can tell us that we're not alone or that we need not be. That the community offers us a place to not sacrifice our integrity and honesty, but helps us sustain us. And that the possibilities that brought us here also tell us that the possibilities branching off into many possible futures are still here as well. And that when we are stuck in thinking that there is only one future, we're missing out on all of the potential. But he goes a little bit further. He says that that faith that he has in the world doesn't bestow any of us any power. It's not a magic, ladder to another plane of existence. It doesn't give us any force or power that we don't already have. But he says, quote, "But it will help to liberate powers in you that you do have. And they are probably greater than what you'd ordinarily consider. For how intimidated we are in thousands of ways from drawing on the full measure of growth and flexibility, ingenuity, cooperation, and love that are human qualities and our individual qualities possess. That we need to have a trust in something that unlocks and liberates the fact that we have worth, that we belong, that we can make a difference, and that it is our purpose to spread belovedness around the world, but that we need each other to do it." So the questions that are raised for me from Roy's work are many. The first one is, what is truly worthy of our faith? Because for many people, including our Unitarian Universalists, we've put our faith in the progress of humanity, and we've been let down time and time again. So what can we truly put our faith in? And secondly, how does what we put our faith in help us in the crisis moments? When I was a hospital chaplain, we called it help us in the PACU, which is like the place you go before surgery. Like, what's a piece of faith that actually helps you before you're going into a big surgery that's not just like cheap, but also helps us build that world in the long haul where our children and every other being can still be around? So I wanted to invite Gretchen up to respond and answer those questions.
I'm just feeling like we got it covered.
Okay. Like, he's going on. He's got it, right? I mean, this is great. I think the only thing that I've been sitting here thinking about, and it's such a treat. I wish all of you got to hear all three of the services today, because I got to hear the full text, and then most of it with Sean's rework. It's like a remix is kind of how I describe the second one.
Yeah.
And then this real exegesis is what I would describe this, which is a term we use in seminary for when you're dealing with biblical texts and you're trying to make meaning out of it, bring the meaning forth out of the text. So it was a treat. Listen to the podcast. So the only thing that I feel like I kind of am sitting with is, I've seen enough people who decide to put their faith in humanity come to a real crisis of faith. And, I think it's insufficient. It's insufficient for us as a primarily humanist, and I mean that in a small letter H, like a humanist tradition, a tradition that tends to put our faith in humanity. I think it's insufficient both for the pre-surgery and the long-haul justice answer. Thank you. All those people in the over here who are getting blinded over here, thank you. And so for me, the faith, I think a lot about, it's a Thomas Merton quote, which I think I didn't share with you last Sunday, where he says that that ultimately that the faith of personal relationships saves everything, which is different. Is he playing us off?
I think we're good. But thank you.
I was like, I always say underscore makes me sound more poignant, which I appreciate. But the faith of in human relationships, personal relationships, saves everything. And that to me is different than faith in humanity. It's about the faith of truly delving in to relationships over the long haul, making a commitment to people, real live people, even when they disappoint you, and staying in. And that to me is very transformative and teaches me about what you were saying about resilience and joy. And also, I would say my other thing that you didn't mention, you kind of were getting to it, which is the concept of emergence. So that it's a scientific concept, actually, that we that small groups of change. Oh, you know that Margaret Mead quote about that never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever have. It's actually not true. It's not that small groups of people can change the world. It's small groups interacting with other small groups. Because what happens when you have a little burst of like something growing and changing and developing in one set of personal relationships, when they interact with another group of personal relationships, put those two things together, it's those things that change the world, those group intergroup relationships. And out of that, something shifts. And that's that is a third thing. And I have a lot of faith in that, actually, and that it's goes to your, there's not a clear direction for where the world is going, but there's a lot of possibility. And so I have faith also in possibility.
So curious to throw it back to some of you in terms of
your turn.
What are some of what do you have faith in? And really, faith is that sense of like trust. Like what do you trust that if you push the button, it's gonna come, in that sense of the elevator. I'm gonna pass around a mic and we're gonna turn it on. Perfect.
Do you want me
it's
to stand
white,
up?
DJ?
If you want to stand up, yeah.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
Oh, green.
Andrea.
Green. Sorry.
One of the things I've thought about for the beginning of 2020. I didn't have a really good 2019, and I realized that it's because I didn't have faith in myself. And so I've kind of committed to betting on myself this year and kind of starting there, because if you don't start there, it's hard to go further.
Thank you.
Gretchen, I like what you said about small groups having interactions with other small groups, but sometimes small groups can be damaging. And it'll affect other small groups that become damaging. And then that doesn't give me my faith in humanity sometimes.
Mm-hmm,
So, yeah, you're right. You're right. But sometimes that doesn't answer what's my faith that is going to make me have faith in humanity. I do like your heliotropic analogy. That was cool.
Other responses? You're like, no, it's just stretching. Don't ring the mic. What do you have faith in?
I've kind of been thinking about this a lot as I put my rocks in, and I've been doing one rock for, the fate of the world, and one rock for my family and personal relationships. And I've been trying to think of the right word for what I want for the universe. And without saying, get rid of this. And I think the word that I'm working with now is liberalism, and with a small L, just, that inclusion and open-mindedness and all of that.
Take one more.
The quote that came to me as I was listening was from one of our early ministers, that the arc of justice, and Martin Luther King picked up on it. And I'm sorry, I don't know the quote by heart.
The arc of the moral justice is long, but it...
The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
And for me, my faith is that this universe was created from unconditional love, and no matter what we do, that will win.
There's a piece of that quote, and thank you, Becky, for bringing that up, because there's a piece of the quote that we leave out of Parker, which says, so the arc of the moral universe is long, and by sight I cannot discern its I'm forgetting a word.
I read it last week. So I have it in my heart. I cannot divine it by, I cannot see it by my eye, but I can divine it by conscience. So it is an act. It's what I like about it is this sense, it's truly a faith statement. It's, he's saying, I can't see it from here. And I appreciate that a lot, that it's a sense of, it's something in him that opens him to trust,
right,
and to trust what's possible. I just want to say one thing back to John's point. I think it's important that we, I think that the idea that change is automatically or necessarily moving us in a positive direction is not a worthy source of faith. I think that change is a worthy source of faith. And so that when I say possibility, I mean, have to keep going. One of my my favorite theologians, Ana Maria Sassi Diaz, she talks about the idea that la vida es la lucha. Life is the struggle, and that's her source of faith. And by struggle, she means like, let's wrestle it out. Let's work it out. And staying in the struggle, staying in the struggle with joy and continuing to find joy in the midst of struggle is our source of faith. And that's I think, don't hunker down into the small groups. Look up, keep going. That's to me faith.
So the only thing I wanted to add, which I feel like Roy's piece really kind of brought out, was he had this whole section where he talks about people who have experienced faith in really crisis moments. They've really felt like there's kind of this divine experience of support and of buoying of their spirits and their lives. And he doesn't want to dismiss that. And he doesn't want to question whether or not it's true. And I feel like that's the last piece around faith and trust, is that there are these questions about whether or not the arc of the universe moves towards justice, these questions about our nature, the questions about even some of our relationships and whether or not that's gonna provide good or ill. There are questions that we can answer. And so the question is, how do you have faith in something that you don't have an answer to? And that stability is something that allows you then to live in a different way. But especially for Unitarian Universalists, we wanna have an answer that's backed up by science, or at least our own personal experiences. And yet some of the time, maybe most of the time, we can't in that same way have the answer. And so how do we live in that sense of vulnerability, but also trusting that then allows us to live in a new way? And it is a dance and a challenge, but it's the work we're up to.
All right, thank you.